So we're going to finish up chapter 1 this week, if you were wondering about that, of Romans. Romans is a very, very relevant book to today. The society of that day is very similar to what we see today in Portland. So if you are thinking this book is old and doesn't apply to us today, it's irrelevant, it has no application because it's an archaic old book, you would be wrong. If you were to take a look at the first century and the large cities that Paul was around at this time when he was writing this book, you would see cities that were very similar to Portland, Seattle. If you want to go down to San Francisco, you could probably count that one in it as well. Cities that are around us right now are very similar to the cities that were around Paul when he wrote this. Very similar moral climate, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Man has not changed. In 2,000 years, my question is, how much progress have we really made?
Zero.
None. Zero. It's correct. Remember, the last week, basically, we saw two things in verse 18. I'd like to go back to chapter 1, verse 18. But God shows his anger from heaven against all sinful, that was the first one, wicked people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. There were two things in verse 8. They were godless. The word sinful is a bad translation that the NLT uses. The actual word is godless or without God, apart from God, disregard towards God. We looked at that last week. And the other one is, the second word is wicked, moralless, unrighteous. So the first thing is disrespect for God. And that ends up leading to wickedness and unrighteousness. When we turn from God, we end up doing wicked. God has displayed himself and made himself visible through creation. We looked at that last week. But men suppress the truth. We have a tendency to ignore the evidence all around us and suppress it and lie about it, make up these ideas in our heads to justify, kind of explain it away, why we don't believe that God created it. There are three steps to this human tendency, and we looked at those last week. The first one is we ignore God, we don't give him credit for anything, and we don't thank him for anything. So that's the first step in completely rejecting or turning from God. Number one is we ignore him, we don't give him credit, we don't thank him for anything. The second one is we imitate God, claiming that we are wise, and we are learned, and we know everything, and we understand all things, and we don't need God to understand anything because we have science. We have academia. We have all these great advances and understanding, and we know all this stuff. That's the second step. And the third step is we end up substituting God for idols. We talked about making images, idols that reflect man, then the animals or the birds, then the animals, and then eventually the reptiles, the snakes. We talked about how cars kind of represent that. They used to be named Lincoln and Ford, and now they're named Shelby, what do they call it, the Cobra and the the Dodge Viper. So you can kind of see that was a Ray Sedman joke, by the way. He was the one that pointed out that the cars kind of represent how society goes, devolves into worshiping reptiles. What happens next? How does God respond? That is what we're going to look at today. So what happens when a society goes down that road of those three steps? Ignoring God, imitating God, and then substituting God with idols. What happens? What does God say? How does God respond to this? Where does a society go when they lose God? There's another three steps that I'm going to show you today about what happens when a society goes down that road. And I want you to notice a phrase that is repeated three times because it breaks up sort of breaks up the three different steps of what happens after a society has completely rejected God and replaced God and think that they're smarter than God. They don't need God to explain anything. The three steps are broken into God gave them over. So you're going to see three different times the phrase God gave them over in the next few verses here. So as we look at the next, today's section of verses, I want you to look for those three times. It's found in verse 24, 26, and 28 where it says God gave them over. And that's usually right around that point in time in the text is when it's moving away from the first step and goes to the second step and then goes to the third step. So you'll notice that the steps are kind of broken up like that. The mark of a morally declining society is found in verse 24. So God abandoned them to do whatever shameful things their hearts desired. As a result, they did vile and degrading things with each other's bodies. I want you to look at the first word there. In most translations, it's therefore. In mine, it says so. That's a transitionary word that means this applies to what happened previously. So if you're looking at those three steps of basically not thanking God, thinking that you're not acknowledging God, ignoring God, and then thinking that you're smarter than God, and then replacing God with idols, this is what's the response to that. This is kind of what happens after that. That's why it says therefore or since. It's connected to the previous part. Romans 1:24. That word therefore or since kind of links it to the part previously. So the dishonoring of our bodies or the impurity is pretty much due to the idolatry, the thinking that our philosophies are smarter than God's, and basically ignoring God from the previous chapter, from previous section of verses. That's where this is coming from. It comes from that section. God gives us over to this idolatry. He gives us a choice. And ultimately, this is the basic bottom line, is that God gives us a choice. The implication of the language is that God allows the society to go where it wants to go. There was a song, 1960s, Mamas and the Papas, I want to go where you want to go, do what you want to do. God's going to allow you to do what you want to do and go where you want to go. And you're going to pay the consequences. Don't get to my punchline yet. The implication is that he gives us the choice. He gives us the freedom to do this. The first sign that God allows us to do what we want to do, he gives us over to it, is sexual immorality. It becomes widely accepted because we replace God with other things and ignore God, and we decide that that's the first sign of when a society gives up God, is that there's sexual immorality. Humans have all sorts of desires and longings, and we think that there are things that can fulfill these desires. We've talked about this before. Spiritual, we have spirituality, we have sexual experiences, we have entertainment, we have consumerism, we have eating too much, you know, all of these things, alcoholism, drug use, all of these things we think will somehow fulfill the desires and the longings of our hearts. And one of the main big ones is sexual experiences. What this is saying is that God's going to allow us to seek after these things that we think will fill the deepest desires of our hearts. And sex seems to be one of those biggest desires. God allows us to experience the full effect of our desires. And by handing us over, that's, as Val said, it's going to be the consequence. There's going to be consequence that happens for it. The interesting thing is that when God delivers us over to it, we kind of discover real quick that that really doesn't fulfill the desires of our hearts. God allows us to make our bed and lie in it. Another one is we reap what we sow. We are allowed to live with the results of our choices. And we find out it probably wasn't the best choice, and it didn't fulfill the desires of our hearts. So why sex, though? Well, a couple of commentators went way into it. Ray Stedman went way into it. I'm not going to get into it too much, but why is the first sign of a declining society sexual immorality? And I think that the interesting thing is that you'll find, and I don't want to argue it out, but all of the commentators and Ray Stedman very strongly said sexual sins are not the worst kind of sins. Because we'll see that the third step is even worse, because people become hostile to each other. Sins are sins. The worst ones, I would probably argue, are spiritual idolatry. But sexual sins are kind of the physical illustration of the spiritual sin. And I don't want to get into this too much, because it would take a lot to explain it, and I'm not very even sure I understand all of it. But realize that sex is a gift, and it was intended for marriage. And in some people's book, it is a form, it is a symbol of worship. It is giving and receiving of full pleasure. It is a craving that everyone has. It's a sense of total fulfillment. It's a sense of belonging. It's a sense of being wanted, being needed. It's a sense of oneness between two people. People think that this is what they are getting or experiencing during sex. But in the end, God's the only one who can fulfill that need. Because you can have sex all the time and still that desire is never filled. The longing in your heart is never satisfied. And you can see that with people who are addicted to this, to all different forms of sexual immorality. They never quite are satisfied. Only God can satisfy the longing of identity and unity and purpose in our hearts. So as I said before, sexual sins are not the worst ones mentioned here. This isn't the height of evil mentioned. It is the sign of the height of evil. It is not the actual worst sins. It leads to the worst, which we'll see here in a few minutes here. But sexual sins are sins of the flesh. What's worse are sins of the heart or of the spirit, and we'll see those shortly. Sins of the heart show us what's going to happen in our spiritual lives if they're not dealt with. The first step to a decline, a moral decline, is sexual sin. So if you're doing a three-part, if you're wanting to know the three parts, here's part number one. Sexual sin is the first sign of a morally declining society who has rejected God. Sexual sin. God allows it to happen. The second step will be 25 through 27. Let's go ahead and read those real quick here. Number 25, they traded the truth about God for a lie. This refers back to what we talked about last week. The truth of God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things God created. Goes back to what we talked about last week. Instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. Amen. And then verse 26, this is why God abandoned them in their shameful desires. Even the women turned against the natural way to have sex and instead indulged in sex with each other. And the men, instead of having normal sexual relations with women, burned with lust for each other. I want you to look at shameful desires and burned with lust. Men did shameful things with other men, and as a result of this sin, they suffered within themselves the penalty they deserved. All right, so let's stop there. The first step is sexual immorality. And I want to call it, kind of refer to it as natural sexual immorality, because there's a distinction between a man and a woman having sex, even outside of marriage, that's sexual immorality. And then you have a man and a man or a woman and a woman. This is, he's saying, is the next step in it. So there's the natural, and then there's the unnatural. So homosexuality is the next mark of a morally declining society. It starts with sexual impurity, and then it goes into perversion or unnatural desires, which is what Paul is calling it. Heterosexual sin to homosexual sin. And in sexual sins, he describes it as dishonoring of our bodies. But here, it's shameful lusts. It's a desire inside of the people. And it's according to a lot of commentators, it's kind of a psychological confusion of the sexes, of the genders, of what sex is supposed to be about. That is the next step in a society who has abandoned God. And you can see this in every single society throughout history who has abandoned God. Sexual sin comes in, then homosexual sin comes in, and then you'll see the next step here in a little bit. God allows humans to have a choice. It's all because of what is found in verse 25. They traded the truth about God for a lie. All of this stuff is basically wrapped up in one big word that overarches all of it. It's actually a short word. It's called lies. All of this stuff can be categorized or characterized as a lie. It's all a big lie. They worship and serve the things God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. They are being allowed to perpetrate this lie and live in that lifestyle. Many churches are embracing it. You know, you could find probably more churches in Portland who embrace that lifestyle. They call it a biological condition. That would be part of the lie. That would be what Paul is talking about. Just like any other sin, understanding that it is a lie and a sin is the first step to being delivered from it. If you try to justify it and say you were born that way, well, I was born a murderer. What kind of an argument is that? I was born a liar. We're all born sinful. The idea of not categorizing it as a sin means that you're never going to be delivered from it because you see nothing wrong with it. That's one of the big lies. If you see it as a sin, then that's kind of the first step of understanding how to be delivered from it. If you never see it as a sin, there's no point in it, from being delivered from it. Verse 26, that is why God abandoned them to their shameful desires. Shameful desires. Even the women turned against the natural way to have sex and instead indulged in sex with each other. This is implying, like I said earlier, there's a natural sex and there's an unnatural sex. And the men, instead of having normal sexual relations with women, burned with lust for each other, men did shameful things with other men, and as a result of this sin, they suffered within themselves the penalty they desired. I want you to notice something here. People will start, the society, the culture, will start with sex outside of marriage. Okay, that's a good thing. We'll go with that. We'll allow that. We'll think, okay, that's okay. That's not so bad. Then it eventually degrades into the unnatural forms of sex, which would be same-sex relationships, group sex, bestiality. I mean, you could think of all different types of unnatural forms of sex. And when you start allowing heterosexual outside of marriage sex to be okay, why not all of it? Because it ends up becoming so degraded that everything gets accepted. God designed you as a man or a woman. And if you start having unnatural sex, it's a confusion of role and situation in life and your biological identity. It's a confusion, and I'm not a scientist or anything, but it's definitely not biological to say that, you know, you could identify with the other sex or whatever. All right, let's go on. This is why God abandoned them to their shameful desires. Even the women turned against the natural way to have sex and instead indulged in sex with each other. And the men, instead of normal sexual relations with women, burned with lust for each other. Men did shameful things with the other men. And as a result of this sin, everything was okay. Nope. They suffered within themselves the penalty they desired. They were given into the sexual deviancy. When the natural sex adultery becomes commonplace and widely accepted, unnatural sex becomes prevalent and eventually accepted as well. You know, when I was a kid, if the word homosexual was kind of frowned upon, the people who were homosexual were kind of frowned upon. Now it's widely accepted. It's totally fine. And it's because when you allow natural sexual issues outside of marriage to be okay and accepted, unnatural becomes accepted eventually too. And that's why we have such a boom in STDs. Andrea was telling me that there was a counselor she was talking to who said that STDs among kids 12 years old are rising. Why do you think that is? Well, it's in the first letter, S, sexual. Sexually transmitted diseases, right? When you start getting to where things are okay and acceptable outside of marriage, then everything becomes acceptable. And you know, the interesting thing is, this isn't new. We think, oh, things have gotten so bad. This isn't new. We'll talk about this in a little bit, but the final, that was mark number two, step number two. The final step of moral decline in a society is found 28 through 32. So let's go ahead and read 28. He says this, since they thought it foolish to acknowledge God, he abandoned them to their foolish thinking and let them do do the things that should never be done. 29, their lives became full of every kind of wickedness, sin, greed, hate, envy, murder, quarreling, deception, malicious behavior, and gossip. They are backstabbers, haters of God, insolent, proud, and boastful. This is the final fruition. It starts out with sex, then it goes to homosexual sex, and now it's gone to this. They invent new ways of sinning, and they disobey their parents. That line sticks out to me quite a bit, having watched a few parent-teacher conferences in my day. They refuse to understand, break their promises, are heartless, and have no mercy. See, we think the sexual sins are bad, and then the homosexual sins are worse, and then these ones, oh, they're not so bad. These are the worst. This is what it degrades into. They know God's justice requires that those who do these things deserve to die, yet they do them anyway. Worse yet, they encourage others to do them too, so that they don't feel so alone, I would suppose. It's a long list of horrible things. This is the mark of a society, a civilization that is in decay. It's complete arrogance, disregard for other humans. It's exploitation of others. That's the climax of an evil society. That's the climax of depraved man and the ultimate result of depraved man running things. Let's go back to 28. Since they thought it foolish to acknowledge God, he abandoned them to their foolish thinking and let them do things. That's the handing them over. Let them do things that should never be done. I think of Hitler. I think of Mao. I think of Stalin. I won't say Mussolini because my wife's here. I think of all sorts of dictators. They break and they destroy others. And everything that they touch is completely destroyed. When it comes to human, they have no regard for human life. They exploit and they kill people senselessly. They have no value for humans. But you know what? In the United States of America today, we have child abuse and neglect, theft, racial beatings, Antifa, abortion. The list could go on. These are things that could characterize the United States if you look at this list again really carefully. Children disobeying parents. Let me tell you something. That's if I would have acted the way these kids act today, I would have gotten beat up by my parents and the teacher at the same time, and then when I got home, gotten another. Right? These kids nowadays, they run their families. They totally disregard their parents. That's just one thing on this list. One thing. Full of every wickedness, sin, greed, hate, envy, murder, quarreling, deception, malicious behavior, and gossip. We have whole industries based on gossip. Television shows based on it. Backstabbers, haters of God, insolent, proud, and boastful. They invent new ways of sinning. That sounds like us. The worst and the final step in this is complete disregard for human life. That's the major part of the lie from verse 25. They traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. The creation has become more important than God, and the human who was created in God's image have become useless. And not only that, there's articles out there saying that the most important living being on the earth is a bee or something, and like no regard for humans. In fact, we're not just unimportant. We're actually doing damage to the world if you listen to the messages that the world is saying. If you completely disregard God, you have to disregard his image. And we, men and women, were created in God's image. Go back to Genesis. We're both made in God's image. And if you have disregard for God, anything that was made in his image, which would be us, you have to have disregard for us too. Because we are reflecting him. We're made in his image. That's the ultimate worst mark of a moral declining society. Morally declining society. This is the sign that we are desperately, desperately needing him. The interesting thing is, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of hope here. Isaiah chapter 9. If you think that this is all happening just today, before I get to the Isaiah chapter 9, because this sort of somewhat ties into this. God allows these choices to happen. The idea of men using other men as women and women using other women as men to kind of the gender confusion thing. It's very common now, but it was extremely common in the first century. A lot of the Greek philosophers, if you were to go back and study their lives and their lifestyles, a lot of them were homosexuals, into group sex and into pedophilia. A lot of the artists from that period, many of the Roman emperors were homosexual. I don't remember, it was like out of the 12, 8 of them or something like this. It was very, very common back then. So this is not new. We act like, oh, it's a new thing. This is not new. This was very common when Paul was writing. And I think that's why it's interesting that we look at these old texts and this doesn't apply to us. Oh, yes, it does. The life that the time that he lived in was very similar to the time we live in. But the interesting thing is that God says he's going to allow them to go towards it. He's not going to restrain them. But if you look back at in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 2, he says, "The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine." And if you look at the first century, the time when Paul was writing, they lived in a very, very dark, 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 sinful world, just like we live in. But that was the world that the Savior was born into. Jesus was born in, that's the light that I think that Isaiah chapter 9, verse 2 is talking about. People who walk in darkness will see a great light. Jesus was born into that world that was completely darkened by sexual immorality and then all of those other sins that come after that. He will come again. And as we saw in Revelation chapter 22, he's the bright early morning star. He's going to come again. The morning star we studied, found out that that's the one that happens right before the dawn. The day comes. It's the same sort of illustration from Isaiah chapter 9, verse 2. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. Eventually, Jesus will return. That was the world he was born into, and he will return to that very same dark world. It's a very similar state today. It makes me want to put it into more of a personal sense. If you think about it, our family members, our friends, our neighbors, our neighbors that live in Portland, right behind you guys, that whole town, that whole city is filled with this lifestyle. We can pray for those of our family members who live in that lifestyle, our neighbors, our friends. There's still hope for some of them because the light is still there. Jesus hasn't come back yet. It has not been completely fulfilled, the time of the Gentiles, as he says. The world is very similar to the state it was in then, and Jesus was born into that world. This might sound a little mushy, but in a sense, Jesus can be born into their hearts still. There's still time. It might not be more than today, but there's still time. Keep praying for your family members. Share the gospel with them, because the time has not ended yet. It may come very soon. We feel like it might come this week even. But there's still time as of right now. Share the gospel with them and love them and realize that the light will come just before the dawn, right? Before that day when God will come and judge.